From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Experts say a standoff between Governor Ron DeSantis and the legislature on proposed immigration legislation could be about political ambition.
When one party controls everything, then the infighting and the competition starts happening within that party, and you have intra-party battles.
Also this week, undocumented immigrants in Florida are worried about what the fight between the governor and the legislature could mean for their futures.
These are people that they value education. These are people that want to contribute to the economy. These are people that want to contribute to their community.
And Florida's agriculture commissioner shares his experience with addressing illegal immigration.
We did many things to let people illegally come into our country at that time, know that maybe Florida is not the place you want to come.
I'm Regan McCarthy. This is Capitol Report. Florida lawmakers and Governor Ron DeSantis are in a standoff over an immigration package passed by the legislature. Tristan Wood reports government watchers say political ambitions are likely at the center of the drama.
The governor called a special session on immigration with his own priority bills. But when the legislature met, they gaveled out his session, tossing his policies, and gaveled in again to pass their own, dubbed the Trump Act. The measure is meant to help the state cooperate with the federal government on immigration. DeSantis has pledged to veto the bill.
I don't need to get any attention. I don't need to get any fanfare. I don't need to get any credit for this.
The governor says the bill passed by lawmakers isn't strong enough. He also disagrees with provisions that take away his control of state immigration enforcement by giving those duties to the agriculture commissioner.
I hope that the legislature would listen to the constituents, listen to the outcry, come up with really strong proposals, outdo me, do better than me, and then you guys get the credit. I don't need any credit.
Lawmakers have been striking back. State Senator Randy Fine, a co-sponsor of the Trump Act, questions DeSantis's loyalty to President Donald Trump, pointing to DeSantis's presidential primary run.
I'm not going to take lectures from someone who a year ago didn't think Donald Trump should be president. Welcome to the team. And there has been no one on the team more dedicated to President Trump being successful than the guy in the front row who's running this bill.
University of Central Florida political science professor Aubrey Jewett says the fight is a symptom of a fractured relationship between most of the legislature and DeSantis. The governor has vetoed budget priorities in recent years that were championed by the same lawmakers who passed bills that thrust him into the national spotlight. Jewett says that has led to little trust in DeSantis among legislative Republicans.
One of the things that the legislative leaders talked about was getting behind someone that you could trust when you were talking about Trump. And in a sense, that was a backhanded compliment in suggesting that they could trust Trump, but maybe not DeSantis. So
Susan McManus, political science professor emerita at the University of South Florida, thinks the standoff is political infighting in preparation for 2026 and beyond. With the Florida Democratic Party at its weakest in decades, McManus thinks it makes sense infighting with Florida Republicans is how future leadership in the state will be determined.
It's an age-old fact in politics that when one party controls everything, then the infighting and the competition starts happening within that party, and you have intra-party battles instead of bipartisan or one party versus another kind of battles. So this is what this is textbook politics. Republicans having such strong control in Tallahassee, then the infighting happens within the party. And of course, right now, probably the people that are feeling the best about all of this are Florida Democrats. And they've had little to cheer about lately.
McManus says DeSantis likely wants to repair his relationship with Trump and keep national relevance for a potential 2028 presidential run. Meanwhile, the legislature's bill would give immigration enforcement authority to current Agriculture Commissioner Wilton Simpson. He's the most recent former Florida House Speaker and on the short list for who will run for governor when DeSantis is out of office in 2026. Immigration enforcement responsibilities could put Simpson in the spotlight, helping to boost his public profile for a potential run. But McManus says the infighting likely isn't what Republican voters want, especially after an election cycle just passed.
The turmoil within the Republican Party in Tallahassee and the minutiae and the personalities and the political ambitions that are driving all of that, to people outside, it looks like a family feud, and they really aren't in the mood for it.
Whatever the outcome of this standoff, experts say infighting among Florida Republicans is likely to continue as people maneuver to climb the political ladder. I'm Tristan Wood.
While Governor Ron DeSantis and Republican legislative leaders battle over how to tackle illegal immigration in Florida, immigrants without permanent legal status are grappling with what the proposed changes could mean for their futures. As WLRN's Valerie Crowder reports, one of those proposals could force undocumented immigrant students who want to attend one of the state's colleges and universities to pay more for tuition.
Didi Flores immigrated to Miami from Nicaragua when she was only 8 years old. Today, she works as a resident doctor. We are not using her real name because she has undocumented immigrant family members.
My dream was always to be a doctor. And I always did really well in school because, like, I wanted to go to college. Like, I wanted to help people. And I love Miami. This is what I call, my home.
Flores is allowed to live and work in the U.S. temporarily under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also known as DACA. That program and the ability to get in-state tuition allowed her to attend college and make her dream a reality.
If it wasn't for in-state tuition, I would have never become a doctor. I was able to graduate with a biology degree, and then I was able to apply to medical school.
Republicans in the legislature have passed a measure that would do away with out-of-state tuition waivers for undocumented students, which would force them to pay double what they're currently spending. And while that proposal wouldn't affect DACA recipients like Flores, it would make it harder for other undocumented students who grew up in the state to afford college.
These are people that they value education. These are people that want to contribute to the economy. These are people that want to contribute to their community. And I think that by getting rid of in-state tuition, you're really getting rid of a lot of talent and a lot of future professionals that can help improve, Florida and Miami.
DeSantis is using his veto power to prevent the legislation from taking effect, but he's thrown his support behind a proposal that would go even further and eliminate in-state tuition for DACA recipients who are here lawfully. Democratic State Senate Minority Leader Jason Pizzo says students shouldn't worry right now, though, because none of these proposals have become law.
Insofar as you have students in class that are working hard right now, that are looking forward to college or university, they should feel comfortable to know that nothing has changed. And until they hear from me, and I'll be very candid and open and public about it, and so will my colleagues both on both sides of the aisle, there is no disruption to in-state tuition waivers right now.
Tiffany Hankins is the Director of Policy and Politics at the Florida Immigrant Coalition.
The Florida legislature, along with the governor, is right now in a nasty game of playing politics, which is catching a lot of the attention, but the impact is on families and real people's lives.
She says the legislature's efforts to help President Trump carry out his executive orders, such as the removal of hospitals, places of worship, and schools from the list of undocumented immigrant safe spaces, has instilled fear and confusion in the immigrant community.
So, we're very concerned about this trend to really target and go after these sites of our community that have, previously been outside of political debate.
Hankins says it's important for undocumented immigrants to know that they have constitutional protections against unwarranted searches and seizures, and they also don't have to say anything to the police if they're questioned. She encourages those who want more information about their rights or their legal status to talk to an attorney or reach out to her organization for guidance.
We want to make sure that people have accurate information and aren't having to, change the shape of their lives based on rumor and hearsay or uncertainty in the legal landscape.
Hankins says as long as state lawmakers continue to try to bolster Trump's efforts to carry out mass deportations, that uncertainty is likely to continue. I'm Valerie Crowder.
On the most recent episode of the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast from the News Service of Florida, Florida Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services Wilton Simpson is back for a wide-ranging and lively discussion. Commissioner Simpson is front and center in the dispute between Governor Ron DeSantis and the legislative leaders over an immigration plan passed this week. Before the tug of war broke out, Simpson shared his thoughts about illegal immigration. Here's an excerpt of their conversation.
Let's talk about the special session. Things are changing very rapidly in Tallahassee. But I wanted to ask you, you testified recently saying that you didn't think that the crackdown on immigration would affect agriculture. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
You probably know this, Tara, but when I was in Senate President's office, and we passed a lot of great bills during my Senate presidency, we banned, you know, we did E-Verify bills. We did sanctuary city bans. We did many things to let people illegally come into our country at that time, know that maybe Florida is not the place you want to come. So we did, you know, Governor DeSantis talks about shipping, you know, some illegals to Martha's Vineyard. It was under my presidency that we gave him the money and the authority to be able to do that. And so we did a lot of things to deter illegals coming into this state, which, by the way, in the last 4 years have been primarily, you know, there's been a lot of criminals and a lot of gangs and a lot of drugs that's coming across that south border. And we have done everything we can as a state, I believe, to help prevent that from coming here. And also, we've sent law enforcement to the border, right, to help Texas with the border crisis at their command. So do I think that, I think that two things have to happen at the same time. I think number one, President Trump is doing an amazing job shutting that border down. You've seen it already. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're sending troops, we're getting the wall reconstruction going again. We're doing all the things to protect our southern border, the, you know, stay in Mexico policy, all of those things. And he's being very effective, as you would expect President Trump to do. I think part two of that is the deportation that's going to start happening. Our state law enforcement has got illegals in every jail probably in this state. And I'm guessing that. I don't have a record of those things, but there are people that are illegally here in jails all across the state. We now can have those illegals deported back to their country. People that are occupying, and we've not really seen this in Florida, but you've seen it in other states, occupying entire buildings that the Biden administration came in and took all of these apartment buildings or hotel buildings and things about that. And I've talked about the secondary crisis that led to was affordable housing. When you house 10 million illegal people in this country, they are being housed in housing that could go to Americans. And it's kind of like, why would we allow us to have such a crisis of affordable housing by all of the illegals that are coming in this country also? So I think that the second part of the deportation and shutting the wall down, which has to happen as President Trump has prescribed, is you've got to have an H-2A program to allow legal labor to come to our farming communities and reside and to be able to do this labor. And let me go one more step further. There's been a bill that's been vetoed here in the state of Florida to allow farmers to build H-2A housing on their sites. This is a federal program. There's federal guidelines, all the things, and the governor's vetoed it. Last year in his veto pen, he said that his concern was is that housing would eventually be used for illegals being here in the state of Florida. So I know the bill sponsor, Senator Collins, which is a close ally of Governor DeSantis and first Green Beret and elected to the Florida Senate, he has refiled that bill this year, and I hope he will put some penalties in the bill to satisfy Governor DeSantis' issues, because when the H-2A labor comes to Florida seasonally to work on our farms and pick crops and things of that nature, they take up a lot of affordable housing for the rest of our citizens. So if we can allow those farmers to have their H-2A programs and make sure that they are not housing illegal labor in these houses, just have the legal H-2A program, then we can really solve a lot of problems. We can have
affordable food, which we all require, and inflation has ravaged us the last 4 years, and including in the food industry. And so we can have more affordable food if we do this. We can have more affordable housing. So we can do a lot of things that rights a lot of wrongs that are currently in our system by allowing housing to come in and getting people that are here illegally out, so that we have this free up this housing for Floridians and in Americans all across the country. We'll be able to have that extra housing, mm-hmm. which will help drive down the cost, by the way, which will help drive down inflation. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing in my mind that's magical about this. It's all common sense. I've talked about common sense a lot in the last 10 years when I served in the legislature and now as Commissioner of Agriculture. And these things are common sense things that we can do to make our food more affordable, our housing more affordable, and our streets safer.
That was Florida Agriculture Commissioner Wilton Simpson speaking with the News Service of Florida's Dara Kam. Researchers are trying a new method to lower the mosquito population in Florida's Golden Gate City. WGCU's Carrie Barber has more.
The Collier Mosquito Control District recently launched a program to reduce the mosquito population in the county. Known as sterile insect technique, it involves sterilizing male mosquitoes with low-dose X-rays so they are unable to reproduce. The targeted mosquitoes are Aedes aegypti, which spread disease such as dengue fever, Zika, and chikungunya. The technique has been proven safe and effective, and it does not involve any genetic modification. It has been used in Lee County for several years. Here's Dr. Kira Lucas of the Collier Mosquito Control District.
This has been used in agriculture for, 50 plus years. It was used to eradicate screwworm in the state of Florida. So we know it works. We just need to make sure it works within our operations.
She adds that it won't upset other flora and fauna in the county.
And it's very important for people to understand that the specific species that we're targeting is Aedes aegypti. It's invasive to the state of Florida. And so it's not really having an impact on our local ecosystem.
In addition, because the male mosquito doesn't bite, the affected insects won't have contact with people or spread disease. The program should result in a reduction of mosquitoes in the county. I'm Carrie Barber.
Still to come on Capitol Report, we'll hear local reaction to a proposal from President Donald Trump that could do away with FEMA.
States can do better on every level.
The federal government appears to be taking a page from Governor Ron DeSantis's book, as the Department of Education says complaints about book bans are unfounded.
We saw language from Florida under Governor DeSantis about book bans being a hoax since book bans started in 2021.
And we'll hear about a new approach to tackling red tide.
We use it as a disinfectant to clean the buildings out. We use it to basically fend off really horrible diseases.
A proposal to eliminate the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, is gaining ground. Some officials in Florida are backing the idea, as they believe it would give states more control over disaster relief efforts. But as Adrian Andrews reports, critics are raising concerns.
President Donald Trump recently talked about the possibility of getting rid of FEMA while visiting a city in North Carolina that's still recovering from the impacts of Hurricane Helene.
I'll also be signing an executive order to begin the process of fundamentally reforming and overhauling FEMA, or maybe getting rid of FEMA.
Trump has criticized the agency for being too slow in getting funds out to impacted communities. He says he'd rather give recovery dollars directly to state governors, leaving them responsible for managing their own disasters.
You want to use your state to fix it and not waste time calling FEMA, and then FEMA gets here and they don't know the area, they've never been to the area, and FEMA's turned out to be a disaster.
In Taylor County, where the community is still recovering from three hurricanes, Idalia, Helene, and Milton, residents think the change could be a good thing. Following Helene, David and Leslie Hall took cell phone footage of their fishing charter business in shambles.
Those are our cabins and our houses that you can't even see. Our store, we don't even know where that is.
The Halls own Spring Warrior Fish Camp in Perry. They say they've yet to receive any money from FEMA for Helene. The storm happened last September, and David has been in contact with FEMA numerous times. He says he's been submitting paperwork but has not seen results. Taylor County's Republican state lawmaker Jason Shove shares that same frustration. He's been helping the county get back on its feet for the past 2 years. He thinks FEMA slows down the recovery process and that the state of Florida is better equipped to handle natural disasters like hurricanes than most federal agencies.
States can do better on every level, and if they allocate the resources that they normally would to each state, allow the states with that additional surplus of resources to do even better things for their people.
But Craig Fugate, a former administrator of FEMA, says faster is not always better. He says most people don't understand FEMA's limits and that certain rules and regulations are in place to protect against bad actors.
Congress wants FEMA to make sure that, one, we get money to people fast, but we don't give money to people that aren't eligible, people that are fraudulently claiming they live there, people who are saying they have damages and didn't.
Fugate adds that Florida has benefited from a lot of FEMA assistance programs. He says in 2018, when Hurricane Michael hit the Florida panhandle, FEMA gave millions of dollars to families. This includes grants, loans, and flood insurance payments. He says while the process is not always the quickest, it works.
This is your money. You as a federal taxpayer are giving money out to these jurisdictions. Are you going to give it with no strings attached? Or do you want to make sure it goes for the right thing, for things that are supposed to be paid for, and more importantly, are built back better so you don't pay for it a second time?
Trump got started with his initiative by issuing an executive order to create a task force called the FEMA Review Council to keep a close watch on the agency and advise the president on recommended changes. I'm Adrian Andrews.
A fight against book bans in public schools has taken several blows recently. The Trump administration dismissed 11 complaints against school districts for removing books from their libraries, calling the concept of book banning a hoax. And a Florida judge dismissed a lawsuit that would have allowed parents to challenge a district's decision to remove a book. Margie Menzel has more.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is celebrating the Trump administration's move to dismiss the complaints, which had been filed under the Biden administration. He's used the term hoax to describe such complaints for years. Here he is back in 2023, standing behind a sign that says, "Exposing the Book Ban Hoax."
We've already exposed with that video, I think, this idea of a book ban in Florida that somehow they don't want books in the library. That's a hoax. And that's really a nasty hoax because it's a hoax in service of trying to pollute and sexualize our children.
In 2025, DeSantis's terminology has gone national. In a press release from the U.S. Department of Education, officials argue books aren't being banned. Instead, school districts are following policies to remove age-inappropriate materials. But Pan America, a free speech organization that works in the literary world, cites more than 10,000 instances of book bans in the 2023-2024 school year. Many of those, more than 4,000, were books challenged or banned in the state of Florida.
We saw language from Florida under Governor DeSantis about book bans being a hoax since book bans started in 2021.
Casey Meehan is the director of Pan America's Freedom to Read program.
We watched press conferences where Governor DeSantis put images up that took, you know, images out of full context of a book. And he used those images to generate panic around what was available to students in public schools across the state of Florida. We've now seen that language jump to the federal level.
Florida has a process that allows challenges to books used by a school district. It's complicated and time-consuming. Florida educators say the effect of this approach is chilling. Betty Castor is the state's former education secretary and retired president of the University of South Florida. She says the problem with using parental choice as a yardstick is all the parents who don't get to choose.
There's a real irony here because if I'm a parent and I want my child reading a variety of books, they now do not have access to the books because another parent complained.
Sally Bradshaw agrees. The owner of Tallahassee's Midtown Reader describes her son as having been a strong reader. She wanted to make sure he wasn't reading books that were too mature for him, so she read the same books he did and kept tabs with the school librarian.
I might have decided a book was too mature for my child at that time, but I would never impose that on another parent. I really think it's a parent's decision, working with a librarian, working with a teacher to find out what is age appropriate for their child. But that's not their decision for other families, for other children.
Bradshaw, the former chief of staff to then-Governor Jeb Bush, disagrees strongly with the argument that banned and challenged books are still available to students in bookstores. She says students may not have the money or transportation. But in an attempt to help, she keeps a section for those books at Midtown Reader and offers a 20% discount.
And we really believe storytelling teaches empathy and brings people closer together. So the concept of book banning was such a foreign concept when I started this process. It was something that happened, you know, in the 1940s in Nazi Germany. It was not something that we expected to be happening in Florida in 2023 and 24 and 25. It has been eye-opening to us.
It's a fight people like Bradshaw and Castor say they expect to continue into the future. I'm Margie Menzel.
You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Regan McCarthy. Finally this week, once red tide starts, there's not much people can do to stop it. WUSF's Carrie Sheridan reports on some new approaches that could help blow this toxic and expensive organism out of the water.
Steve Rowley is with Heartland Energy Group. His product is called Extreme, but he says it's actually less harsh than chlorine or bleach. Speaking at a red tide event in Sarasota this week, he says it's already being used on pig farms to prevent the spread of viruses.
So we use it as a disinfectant to clean the buildings out. We use it to basically fend off really horrible diseases. Like one in the hogs is called PERS, which is very similar to a COVID. It's a respiratory disease that the animal can get, and it can kill them within a day.
In tanks of water with both red tide and clams, tests showed it killed red tide, but the clams were not toxic. Another technology on display this week at Moat Marine Laboratory in Sarasota was called Ozonix. It's a truck bed full of machinery that uses no chemicals, just water and air. Steve McKenzie with Prescott Clean Water says the system sucks up water, creates nanobubbles that consume the toxin, and spits out clean water.
The bubble collapses, it causes a shock wave, it destroys a cell, and at the same time oxidizes the toxin.
Richard Pierce, a vice president for research at Moat, says these technologies are safe and ready to go. The question is, who will pay for them to be used in the next red tide?
Who cleans up the dead fish on the beaches? That causes millions of dollars. We can avoid that if we use this first. So I think there's a real economic benefit if people see that.
He hopes cities and counties will pay to avoid the high cost of cleanup and the loss of tourism dollars. I'm Carrie Sheridan in Sarasota.
Our regular Capital Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Tristan Wood, Margie Menzel, and Gina Jordan. Thanks also to Valerie Crowder, Derek Hamm, Carrie Barber, and Carrie Sheridan. Technical assistance for Capital Report comes from Evan Rossi. I'm Regan McCarthy. Join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Capital Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.